Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, always at your side. Located in Reston, Virginia, serving the entire Washington, D.C. metro area, with clients all across the country, OFP is your full-service law firm. Please visit us on the web at ofplaw.com for more information about the attorneys at the firm and the services that we offer. Also, I invite you to subscribe to my blog, blueprintforwealth.org, where you can get video, audios, including all of these old radio shows, and articles on tax, estate planning, and business planning topics of interest. And of course, today, getting near the end of the year, we're always interested in talking about tax planning strategies. And I know I've done it several times throughout the year, but hey, it's coming to the end of the fiscal cliff, and we might as well, hopefully there will be no fiscal cliff that we fall off of. We'll see what Congress does for us. But in the meantime, let's talk about top tax strategies, assuming that the Bush tax cuts do in fact expire at the end of this year. That is the theme for my year-end tax planning for all my clients and for all of you listeners. The theme is uncertainty. And chief among the reasons are the sky-high exemptions on the estate tax, the lifetime gift tax, and generation skipping tax, which all are set to expire at the end of this year. All are currently set at $5.12 million for 2012, but they're headed for expiration at the end of the year. Most planners expect that these taxes and others, including taxes on capital gains and dividends, will be going up, way up, next year. Though no one knows for sure. And that's the rub. The big question is whether the Bush-era tax cuts are going to expire at the end of 2012. Many expect Congress, in a lame duck session, to come through with some form of extension that will not cause all of the Bush tax cuts to expire. We just don't know what that's going to look like. Now, I've got a list of top strategies for you to think about before the end of the year. And these are strategies, again, that are based on the assumption that the Bush tax cuts may in fact expire. Number one on my list, particularly for those clients who have enough financial wealth to afford it, is considering the $5.12 million estate and lifetime giving tax exemptions. We may not see those in the near future for quite a while, as a matter of fact. For the rest of the year, beneficiaries of anybody who dies won't pay federal estate tax on the first $5 million of value of his or her estate. A gift tax and generation skipping tax exemption, both at $5.12 million, were designed to synchronize with the estate tax exemption. That means that before they die, our clients, you, can give up to $5.12 million to anyone, including grandchildren, or charity without any limitation, without paying taxes on the money. For couples, the limit is over $10 million. With a 35% tax on assets above these thresholds. There's also a $13,000 annual gift tax exemption, which is scheduled to go up to, I believe, $14,000 next year. It remains in place and does not count against these $5 million thresholds. By next year, if Bush tax cuts expire, the exemptions will drop to $1 million for gift tax and estate tax, and about $1.32 million for the generation skipping transfer tax. Many of my clients have already taken advantage of these exemptions, but others think they pose hidden and dangerous risks. There are a number of things that we leave to our kids. They include family values, faith, and work ethic. But trading a tax savings for a work ethic, or at the expense of creating a trust fund baby, may be a good choice. Some of my clients have decided it's just not worth the risk to give money too soon to a child or a grandchild, even if the high giving threshold disappears next year. Of course, you can always place these assets in trust that are controlled by third parties, and the third parties can use their discretion as to whether or not any of these assets really ultimately end up in the hands of your kids or grandkids. Number two on my list is channeling estate transfers through and using family limited partnerships and limited liability companies. I've been advising my clients to combine the gift tax exemption with these types of vehicles. The partnerships or LLCs are a tool that you can use to give away a great deal of wealth, but remain in control of the underlying assets. One of my clients, for example, owned about $7 million in commercial real estate. By putting it into a family LLC, the actual value of the property was discounted to about $4.5 million through an appraisal process for tax purposes because it's not liquid, and any minority interest in that entity, in that limited liability company, is not marketable. The gift, therefore, fell under the $5 million gift tax threshold and was made tax-free. The giver can remain a general partner or a manager of the LLC, owning a small percentage, but keeping all the decision-making to himself or herself. The remainder of it can be owned by the child or a trust, better yet, for the benefit of the child. When the giver dies, the recipient may pay a capital gains tax on the difference between the tax basis of $4.5 million and any appreciation that is generated on the property. So if it appreciated to $10 million, who cares? They still got $7 million out of the estate, and the tax rate may be as high as 55% on that. Number three, open a donor-advised fund if you're charitably inclined. A donor-advised fund allows somebody to contribute any amount he or she wants to charity without having to name the charity right away. Once the money is in the fund, it's gifted from the perspective of the Internal Revenue Service. But the client can take his or her time deciding who will get the ultimate disposition of the funds. It gets the money out of the income tax column and buys time for you. Part of many people's identity, many of my clients' identities, are how closely tied they are to a specific charity or particular purpose. So even if they have a couple of bad years, they can keep up with their giving commitments if they've set aside funds in one of these donor-advised funds. Next on my list is using highly appreciated stocks, which there are still many, for charitable giving. Whenever possible, I urge my clients to give highly appreciated stocks instead of cash to fund charitable causes. It allows you to keep up with your giving, but avoid having to pay capital gains tax on your low basis cost investments. Next, and you've heard this hundreds of times, but I'll say it again, for certain people, a Roth IRA conversion does make sense. When it comes to contemplating this conversion, please proceed with extreme caution and have your accountant by your side when you do this. In the right cases, Roth conversions make sense. One example, let's say you have an executive who retired last year, but is not yet 70 and a half years old when you're required to take out distributions from your IRAs. For this year, he has no earned income and is not taking Social Security. His only income is capital gains. 10 years from now, however, he's going to be taking out six-figure distributions from his tax-deferred retirement accounts. So maybe he does a Roth conversion of $100,000 this year at the lowest state and federal rates, particularly when rates are lower this year than they may be in the future. He pays the taxes now, and the money that he's converted will grow tax-deferred forever, meaning it's tax-exempt after that. Another advantage of Roth conversions, by the way, is that Roth accounts are not burdened by mandatory distribution requirements. So when you hit age 70 and a half, you're not required to make distributions out of a Roth. Here's another idea. Direct your annual gift tax exemption of $13,000 this year to 529 college plans. I urge my clients to put annual tax-free gifts of $13,000 for each child or grandchild directly into a 529 account. These accounts allow tax-free accumulation of investments in savings accounts that are earmarked to pay for higher education or qualified college education expenses. They're wonderful. Another idea, investing in municipal bonds. This is going to be a hot topic. If dividend rates truly do rise from 15% to 43.4%, and interest rates can be taxed as high as 43.4% next year, many of our clients, many of you, are going to be investing heavily in municipal bonds, which will cause the bond market to shift and the pricing of bonds to change. So many people are actually starting to look at municipal bonds as alternative investments. For high net worth individuals, the tax-adjusted returns for municipal bonds can be superior to those on alternative fixed income interests securities like treasury bonds. Also, invest in an independent film. Here's my last tidbit for today. Under Internal Revenue Code Section 181, you can take a write-off for investing in an independent film. It's really popular out in LA. You can take the write-off as long as the total budget on the production is less than $15 million and as long as 75% of the film is produced in the United States. Now you know why there's no shortage of independent films debuting every year, even though fewer people are going to the movies. I'm Wayne Zell, and you're listening to Blueprint for Wealth, and those are some top tax planning ideas for 2012. Check with us at OF&P at 703-218-2100 for more help on these topics.